Will the House come to order? Would the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
30 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Following representatives have already been excused from the call of the House today. Representatives Donnelly, Pearson, Taylor.
Our chaplain today is Pastor David Swofford of the First Church of God. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. Dear Lord, thank you for being with us throughout this week. Lord, I praise you for the representatives and their work. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for the men and women who have worked hard this week to see that the government and the condition of life is improved here in the great city of Alaska. Father, again I pray for the business that will be handled today, and I leave this place in your hands. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Representative Boyer, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The clerk at this time, please certify the journal for the 53rd legislative day.
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 53rd day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journal for the 53rd legislative day as certified be approved.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal and the supplement? Hearing no objection, the journal and supplement stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction today? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to introduce a constituent of Representative Larson and Menards, who's a special friend of mine in Gallery A. And I'll say that when I was in the sixth grade, I had to very timidly call him Mr. McAllister. And I think that Representative Rieger had him for eighth grade English, Howard McAllister in Gallery A.
Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my privilege and honor this morning to introduce to the body a distinguished constituent of Representative Brown's and myself, an advocate for Alaska's seniors, Alaska's pioneers, a good friend of mine from Fairview, Helene Hennings. Mr. Speaker, while I have the floor, I'd also like to reintroduce to the body a woman who's been volunteering for me in my Anchorage office as an intern, handling issues that relate to women and children, and especially the topic that's of concern to a lot of members of this body relating to runaways in the state of Alaska. And so Angela Salerno, I owe her a great debt of gratitude and appreciate her efforts this week.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent the prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Any further guests for introduction? In Gallery A, there's a person from my district who is with Women with Timber. Would you help me welcome Elaine Strelo? Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, since you're totally out of control, perhaps I can continue this.
Well, perhaps I should inform the members of the gallery that it is improper to speak when the House is in session here, but We're easy. Go ahead, Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, it gives me a pleasure to introduce a young lady who is not from my district. I noticed one of her representatives is temporary off the floor. Young lady who has been active in the school board for quite some time is Sherry Davis from Ketchikan.
Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has approved the following citations, and they are transmitted for consideration. Honoring Anchorage School District's Energy Award Program, and honoring the Kenai Cardinal Girls Basketball Team, and honoring Bill Cotter, 1987 Yukon Quest Sled Dog Race winner.
Rules for calendaring.
And they've also approved the following, and they are transmitted to enrolling. Honoring the Isleson Ravens Boys Basketball Team, and honoring Avery Moore, honoring Monroe High School Girls Basketball Team, and honoring the Constitution Forum. The Senate has passed and returned House Joint Resolution Number 6, amended, relating to reciprocal competition in marine transportation services between United States and Canadian companies operating in Alaska and Yukon Territory. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 112, Resources, amended by the Resources Committee, an act relating to forest management agreements.
Two standing committees, Resources and Finance.
Senate Bill Number 159 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act amending an appropriation to the Alaska Power Authority for the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project and providing for an effective date.
Resources and the Finance Committee.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 157, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act appropriating from the earnings reserve account of the Alaska Permanent Fund to the General Fund.
State Affairs and the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
We've received the annual report from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development Office of International Trade, and this is on file in the Speaker's office, and I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the daily order of business to reports of standing committees.
In accordance with your instructions, and this is from the Committee on Health and Social Services. In accordance with your instructions and with AS 39580, the House Health, Education, and Social Services has considered the Governor's appointments to boards and commissions as follows. To the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, the Board of Dispensing Opticians, the State Medical Board, the Board of Nursing, the Board of Examiners in Optometry, the State Physical Therapy Board, the Board of Pharmacy, Professional Teaching Practices Commission, the Board of Psychologists, and Psychological Associate Examiners. There were no stated objections to confirmation of the named individuals by committee members. This does not necessarily indicate an intention of any individual committee member to vote for or against the individuals named at the time of the joint session on confirmation. The report was signed by the following people: co-chairs Kopanen and Ellis, and concurred in by Grunberg, Hanley, Phillips, Donnelly, and Hudson. The Finance Committee has considered House Resolution Number 2, relating to the University of Alaska Community College System, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Resolution Number 2, Hess, with the same title, reports it back as follows. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing DuPass, Forshow, Swackhammer, Brown, and Larson. Having no recommendation, Adams, Boyer, Rieger, Frank, Wallace, Davis, and Gall. House Resolution Number 2 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution Number 13, relating to the expeditious redesign and reconstruction of the airport road in Bethel. Reports it back as follows with a fiscal note. Report was signed by Cato, Chairman, signing DuPass, Cato. Having no recommendation, Miller, Hudson, and Springer. Here's signed, do not pass, handle in CIP process. House Concurrent Resolution Number 13 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 54, creating the Alaska Seismic Hazard Center, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 54, Hess, with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Forshow, Boyer, Gall, Larson, Swackhammer, Rieger, Brown, and Davis. Wallace has no recommendation. House Bill 54 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 115, relating to public use of the Dalton Highway, and recommends it do pass and attaches two fiscal notes. Report was signed by Cato, Chairman, signing due pass, Cato, Hudson, Miller, Pierce, and Springer. House Bill 115 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 133 relating to eligibility for permanent fund dividends, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 133, State Affairs, with the same title, recommends it due pass, attaches two fiscal notes, 1-0 fiscal note, and 2-0s with analysis. The report was signed by Omer, Chairman, signing due pass, Omer, Davidson, and Menard. Martin has no recommendation. House Bill 133 has a further referral to the HES Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 143, relating to the assessment of civil penalties under the Alaska Securities Act, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 143, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, concurring Donnelly, Ellis, Davidson, and Boucher, having no recommendation, Menard and Furness. House Bill 143 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Louise Marie Brabow by Representatives Omer and Hudson and Senator Duncan. Citation honoring Alaskan Doctors with a Heart by Representative Hanley. Citation honoring Alaska Pacific University Pioneers Wrestling Team by Representative Phillips. Citation honoring the participants and organizers of the Iditarod Basketball Classic by Representative Springer and Hoffman. I have no further citations for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Those citations for our consideration will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill Number 1 by Larson and Menard. An act converting regional educational attendance areas into third-class boroughs and providing for an effective date.
Three standing committees, CRA, Health and Social Services, and also the Finance Committee.
House Bill Number 180 by Swackhammer, Greening, and Rieger. An act relating to the operation of correctional facilities by private contractors.
HES, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill Number 181 by Menard and Larson, an act establishing Marmot Bay Day and designating the official state marmot.
Four standing committees, State Affairs, Resources, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill Number 36 by Grusendorf, an act requiring certain motor vehicle insurance policies to provide reduced rates for certain persons. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 36, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches 2-0 fiscal notes. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, concurring Donnelly, Ellis, Copen and Davidson, Menard and Boucher. Furness has no recommendation. Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 36, Judiciary, with a new title, and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Sund, Chairman, concurring Sund, Omer, Grunberg, Taylor, Navarre, and Cotton. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having two committee substitutes, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill Number 36.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the committee substitute Judiciary? Hearing no objections, that committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill Number 36 be engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Any objection to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 36, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act requiring certain motor vehicle insurance policies to provide reduced rates for certain persons and providing for an effective date.
Third reading and under debate. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 36, Judiciary, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed a vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk take the board.
33 yeas, 4 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 36, Judiciary, has passed the House. There's effective date clause. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage for the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 36 be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 58 by the Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. An act relating to the disclosure of certain state tax assessment information by the Department of Revenue. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 58 Judiciary with a new title, and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Sund Chairman, signing do pass, Sund, Ulmer, Grunberg, Navarre, and Cotton. Barnes signed do not pass. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 58 Finance with a new title, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Porchot, Vice Chairman. Signing do pass, Gall, Porchot, Boyer, Davis, Brown, Frank, Swick, Hammer, Wallace, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Rieger and Larson. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having two committee substitutes, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill number 58.
Are there any objections as the adoption of the CS Finance? Hearing no objection, the CS Finance has been adopted. Is there any further amendments that the clerk has?
Mr. Speaker, I have an amendment number 1 by Davis and Larson, and I don't know if this has been duplicated. I just received it.
Representative Davis?
No, it hasn't, Mr. Speaker. Can we have a brief at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come to order? Before the at ease, we had the bill before us in second reading, and we now have amendment number 1. Would the clerk please make reference to amendment number 1?
Amendment number 1 by Davis and Larson, and starts page 5, line 14, and it now has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment, asking unanimous consent.
Hearing objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is an amendment which I think improves the legislation. Merely what this does is close the gap that's in the legislation. The way the legislation works now, that if a legislative committee would like to request information from the Department of Revenue, they need to go to the either legislative body and pass a simple resolution. Well, what the concern that a number of us had was what would happen during the interim if we didn't have this resolution. And so what I've done is drafted up an amendment which would give that authority to the Budget and Audit Committee only with the concurrence of the majority of the members. And I think this would take care of any problems that could arise during the interim. And so I'd ask the body's adoption of this amendment.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. This amendment simply addresses a concern that was brought up during the Finance Committee meetings on what would happen during the interim. And if we're going to have such a piece of legislation as before us, I think it's important, too, that we be able to address these concerns during the time when the legislature is not in session. Therefore, I, too, would urge the body to vote favorably upon this amendment.
Representative Porchot.
I object to the amendment, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to mention for the body that this was not a topic that the subcommittee in the finance that was looking at the bill treated lightly at all, and we did have a considerable discussion on which committee, who, under what process, that confidential information would be allowed to be presented to the legislature or to a legislative body. One point that was raised is this fills a gap in when information could be transmitted from revenue to the legislature during the interim. In our view of this, we saw this as a much more in-depth process or a complicated process in studying tax policy, the equity of our tax system, and not something that was a one-shot deal or an emergency basis. And during the interim, although there may be occasions that might come up, we couldn't envision a one-time or emergency situation where, gee, we need this information and we need to get it fairly fast without going through a simple resolution process. What we had envisioned was that tax policy or back taxes would be a major focus of a committee which we didn't know what it might look like. One year it might be LB&A, one year it might be a special interim committee on taxation, one year it might be a special oil and gas committee, but it might take various forms, and so we got very hung up on what committee would we be giving this authority to. So rather than trying to choose between various committees or situations in the future, we chose rather the simple resolution, which would give to whatever committee was appropriate for that session the authority, and it would be laid out relative to the purposes. It would be debated as to what we were trying to achieve and what safeguards would be pursued. This bill before you, absent the amendment, does not preclude an interim committee to conduct work on or with confidential tax information. The situation we would envision under the bill would be that sometime during the session, a simple resolution would be presented and hopefully passed by the body, giving Committee X the authority to do this. And if it was, for example, a joint special committee on taxation or on oil and gas, that they would pursue this work during the interim, and they would be fully authorized during the interim to receive confidential tax information, but it would be through a simple resolution passed in the prior session. So, Mr. Speaker, I think that the legislation before you is one that has been carefully crafted to allow the legislature to conduct legitimate work in reviewing our tax policies and our current tax assessment situation or any number of other tax policy questions, and at the same time providing some very basic mechanisms for protecting private taxpayers in the state and for formalizing a process under which we would obtain what could be highly confidential and commercially sensitive tax information. Thank you.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 1? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have to agree with almost everything the Speaker to my right said, except for one statement that he made is sometime during the session that we would give this authority to some interim committee. If that doesn't happen during the session, then we're going to have to wait until the following January to give some authority to that committee that's during the interim. This would merely put in place the fact that you would have an interim committee which would be budget and audit, which is an ongoing standing committee of the legislature. You'd have that authority for the budget and audit to meet with the concurrence of all the members. It isn't the chairman of the budget and audit making the decision he wants to gather some information. It would be a majority of the members would meet and make the decision if they didn't have authority granted during the session. And this merely, as I said earlier, closes that gap, gives them authority, and that's I urge its adoption. Thank you.
Any further debate? Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also oppose this legislation. I think that the arguments about how you would have to wait from session to session to get a resolution applies to all the legislation that's in front of us, and I don't see why this should be special. I think that the requirement for a resolution of either body is an important safeguard. It does, having something go through the entire House does tend to, in many times, improve legislation. I would point out that the bill that's before us right now is dramatically changed from the bill which was introduced at the request of the Budget and Audit Committee at the start of the session. And I think that the safeguard should be left in place, and I would urge the members to oppose this amendment.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number one be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the board? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
19 yeas, 18 nays.
Amendment number one has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the bill be engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement motion from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee Substitute for House Bill 58, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee. An act relating to confidential tax information, relating to the filing of tax returns and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Are you ready for Representative Martin?
I feel compelled to bring up a few questions. A lot of people may not realize how far-reaching this bill is and to what degree will we go under the realm of a public purpose, of a public right to know. And I'd like to ask the major promoters of the bill if they would try to solve, in my mind, about four major questions. One, is this confidentiality of tax report limited only to the oil and gas industry? Is it just one specific thing? Does it reach out maybe to the minerals industry in later years, or the coal industry, or the fishing industry? Then what about the right to privacy, because a corporation is considered a private individual versus you and I as individuals, or our constituents as individuals? I'd like to clear in my mind, how far-reaching is this? Is it just limited to a specific purpose of one industry for our right to know and better evaluate our revenues? And also, a major problem that we did discuss last year, and I don't really see any explanation of it, is the constitutional aspect of rights to immunity for legislatures. And to what degree is an individual who signed one of these agreements that they will not leak the information that they received? Are we some way or other going around and getting away that constitutional immunity provision that has proven over the years very, very important in protecting legislators from free and open debates? Just by luck, I happened to be reading two nights ago the original English Bills of Rights, where the king used to take the parliamentarians and just march them to court if they said the wrong thing the day before, and let them sleep in jail overnight to rethink what they said and then come back the next morning and apologize. Well, here we're giving the individual legislator an opportunity to sign off the freedom of debate under the immunity, and they are subject to a substantial punishment penalty of $5,000. And then the protection of the individual, I don't see in here as to what degree we will go to protect the individual from a time certain. We said that any legislative aides who somehow ever directly or indirectly let known confidential information are perhaps punishable under civil law, but there's no limit. It seems to me that maybe 5 years, 10 years, or whatever, that somehow ever someone for eternity may be subjected to something they signed 5 years previous or 10 years previous, and inadvertently they're talking about this subject 10 years ago, when the oil industry, we found out their tax laws were this, this, and that. So I'm worried about a time limit, and that comes under page 7, subsections G. Would someone please explain those?
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll try to address my colleagues' questions. The first question that was raised is this limited to just oil and gas companies? No. The bill would apply to now to all corporate taxpayers. It's no secret oil and gas companies are major taxpayers. But in addition, it would also apply to all people who currently file corporate income taxes. Second is relative to the right of privacy. As I mentioned earlier on debate on the amendment, this bill is fully recognizes the right of privacy of taxpayers and tries to balance those rights with the rights of the legislature to have knowledge of how our tax policies and laws are working. And I think a good description of that balance is contained in the first two pages under purposes and findings of the legislature, and it outlines what some of those duties and responsibilities of the legislature are, and also recognizes the rights of taxpayers. I would also note in the handout that I should be on all members' desks under my letterhead, there are a number of safeguards that are contained in the bill to specifically try to prevent illegal disclosure of the confidential information. The third question that was asked was relative to the constitutional right of immunity that lawmakers have under the Constitution. And this was a topic, as the member pointed out, of great debate last year on the bill. And I can't give you a complete or satisfactory explanation of that. I'll tell you, the bill does provide misdemeanor penalties for anybody who discloses. It does, as a member pointed out, require an acknowledgement, a signed acknowledgement that it is against the law to release this confidential information. And it also adds to the conflict of interest statutes in our ethics bill the provision that release of the information is a direct violation of specific legislative ethics law. Having said all that, it is still an unclear point of law as to whether someone could conceivably stand up on the floor of the House and divulge confidential information. Nothing in this law or this bill before you can really address that question. That is ultimately a court determination and indeed a constitutional issue involved. But we feel comfortable, the people that have been working on the bill, that we have designed the bill to work as best it can, and it's fully the expectation that there are some very real penalties that could be placed against legislators for illegal disclosure of confidential information. The fifth question related to is there a limit on when I presume somebody could be prosecuted for disclosures some years down the road on confidential information? I don't have a correct legal interpretation of that. My assumption would be because it's a misdemeanor penalty, it would fall into our regular statutes regarding statute limitations on issues like that. I would say as a practical matter that the most commercially sensitive information that might be disclosed that would be most damaging to taxpayers becomes moot after 2 or 3 years in our testimony that we've heard, that after several years there is not much in the way of transactional analysis, transactional documents, specifically regarding, say, oil pricing contracts, that would really be damaging if disclosure would occur several years from the date of the document.
Any further debate? Mr. Majority Leader.
May we please have a brief at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before they had ease, we had the bill before us in third reading and under debate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think it's a problem. I think everybody's here, but I'd like to call the House on this particular bill.
The House has been called. Is there any further debate? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to this bill. I base my opposition on the Constitution of the State of Alaska, directing your attention to Article 2, Section 6, the Immunities Clause that has been discussed. Directing your attention also, Mr. Speaker, to a memo dated January the 28th, 1987, which accompanied the first draft of this bill by Legislative Council. She raises in her memo that accompanied the bill, this memorandum accompanies the draft of the committee substitutes that you have requested. And since I have taken the liberty of looking at the finance CS as it compares to this original memo, I have added the sections and will be reading the sections that I have added also to what she has said. Please be aware that Section 5 and 6 of the finance draft raises a constitutional question. Proposed subsection A in Section 5 and 6 could be challenged as violating the speech and debate immunity clause appearing in Article 2, Section 6 of the Alaska Constitution. Subsection A would subject legislators to liability enforceable by other branches of government for acts occurring during the exercise of their legislative duty during the session or while going or returning to or from session. Directing your attention, Mr. Speaker, further to a memo from Harold M. Brown, Attorney General, that I believe accompanied the bill in 1986, was addressed to Lou Ann Cutler, House Finance. It speaks of addressing or looking at the California law, the United States law, and the constitutional provisions, and directing your attention to that memo. Thus, the immunity is more than an individual privilege protecting the legislators. Its purpose, Mr. Speaker, is to protect as well the constituents of those legislators who have an interest in assuring free debate by their legislature. As a result, since it is not a personal privilege, it is not clear whether immunity may be waived by a legislative body. Mr. Speaker, I do not believe this body, the other body, or any other body can waive a constitutional provision. Thank you.
Any further debate? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think that anyone ever intended to have this legislation, even if it could, waive any constitutional rights or guarantees. A couple of real quick points, though. As the former speaker mentioned, other states have similar laws. The United States, in fact, has a procedure that's quite a bit simpler than this. A committee chairman, for instance, can merely and simply request the information to be brought to a committee of Congress without any resolutions or without some of the safeguards that this legislation provides. And secondly, the Constitution, as the former speaker mentioned, discusses legislators and their activities during the legislative session. Now, you want to think about other possibilities after we leave this session and go back to our homes. We would not be protected by the Constitution, and if we had information that was gained under these circumstances and we at that point divulged it, we would not be protected by the Constitution. So that's another thing that was considered during the discussions. Finally, of course, this body can impose sanctions on its members anytime it sees fit, anytime it feels that there's just cause, and that would be another opportunity to impose a penalty on a member of the legislature who chose not to keep confidential some of the information that they may receive under these circumstances.
Any further debate? Representative Sund.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I just want to follow a little bit up on the prior two speakers, and if people would look at immunity section, Article 2, Section 9, it basically specifically states the legislators may not be held to answer before any other tribunal for a statement made in the exercise of the legislative duties. And just to emphasize that this issue came up quite a bit in judiciary, that I think the scenario really is one of which this information is disclosed. A person agrees to keep it confidential and then walks out here on the floor of the House and reads off the data, and that's the situation. I think that this body has the authority to do what it feels is necessary in terms of discipline, even up to the expulsion of a member from here. And I think Representative Chairman of the Ethics Committee has explored that issue quite thoroughly, if you can go through. But we do have the power to expel people from the legislature. And I think ultimately that is the power that resides in us. No other tribunal can do it, but we have the power to enforce our own rules here. And I think that gives that authority. And then the one other item of it is that if you're not in the session anymore, if you're not in the legislature anymore and you disclose this, when you agreed not to, then there's civil penalties and criminal penalties provided. So I think the confidentiality issue is adequately covered. And I do agree with the speaker in front of me that this is not an individual privilege. I agree that this is a privilege of the people and it cannot be waived in that manner, but I think we have the ability to deal with it if it does happen.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I meant to make a comment about another section of the bill. If you'll take a look at page 5, line 3, that subsection 2 there discusses the reasons that the legislature can't use to request this information, and one of those is that we can't ask for the information in order to direct the activities of the executive branch of government. I didn't feel that this was absolutely necessary to put in there because the legislature, of course, cannot direct the activities of the Department of Revenue or any other executive function. But several people felt that this would be necessary in order to give the protections they were interested in. But the point I wanted to make was that this would not, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of the committees that discuss this, would not prevent, for example, an executive providing information to the legislature and asking, for instance, on a settlement, what do you think? That wouldn't mean that we were directing the executive branch, but it would mean that we might be able to see what the settlement proposal would be before it actually took place. So I wanted the legislative record to show that that activity would be permissible and would not constitute directing the activities of the executive branch.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to remind the body that the one of the protections that the Finance Committee worked on carefully and crafted into this was a requirement that the request for a tax return go through the House or through either body and have a resolution approved, and as amended, that protection is no longer in the bill.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 58, Finance Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board.
28 yeas, 9 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 58, Finance Amended, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If we're concluded with this bill, I'd like to bring up reconsideration of House Bill 120.
Reconsideration has been brought up on House Bill 120. Would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 120, financed by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the principal and interest paid to the Power Development Revolving Loan Fund and providing for an effective date. We are in third reading, and I have a proposed amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Third reading and under debate. Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, could we have a brief at ease, please?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we now have the bill before us in third reading and under debate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I call the House on all amendments and final passage.
The House has been called. Representative Navarre.
Mr. Speaker, could we revert to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections to reverting to introduction of guests? Hearing no objection.
In Gallery A, Representative Swackhammer and I have a guest who is on the Kenai Peninsula Borough School Board, Deborah Mullins.
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back to the reconsideration. You should have on your desk amendment number 2 and 3. Are there any objections by the sponsor of amendment number 2 that amendment number 2 becomes amendment number 3 and amendment number 3 becomes amendment number 2? Bill is before us in third reading, under debate. Representative Barnes.
Mr. Speaker, do I understand now that my amendment has become amendment number 2?
That is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment.
Hearing objections, a little bit of latitude.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The amendment before you, and directing your attention backward to when we last had this bill before us, there was some concern about putting the money in the Rail Belt Energy Fund. And so what I have done with this amendment, although I do not believe there's a constitutional problem with the money staying in the revolving loan fund as it presently is, since the governor has raised that issue, what this amendment does is simply reappropriate the money to the Power Development Revolving Loan Fund so that as the years go by, when we have a need for funds for power development in the state, that there will be funds in the Power Development Revolving Loan Fund. So simply put, it is an amendment to reappropriate the income that is presently coming in to the Power Development Revolving Loan Fund back into that fund.
Remember, the question before us is to move back from third to second reading for the purposes of the amendment. A little bit of latitude on the amendment. Are ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 120, Finance, be returned to second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
29 yeas, 8 nays.
The bill is before second reading. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
Hearing objection.
Mr. Speaker, I really do not think that there's much more that can be said because I think the amendment speaks for itself. It's very clear. It's very straightforward. It reappropriates the income stream presently coming in from the four dam pool back into the revolving loan fund so that we would have those funds for future power development. And in case of an emergency, also the funds would be there if the generators broke down, if there was a problem that the $7 million that's presently there does not cover, this amount of money would be there. It also could be used for any other programs approved by the legislature at a future date.
Any further debate? Representative Brown.
I oppose this amendment, Mr. Speaker. I think the body should keep in mind what we're trying to do here, and that's correct a violation of the constitutional prohibition on dedicated funds. And the option to appropriate money for power projects is always available to the legislature in the future. What we are trying to accomplish is a more straightforward accounting of the state's general funds, and this amendment does not accomplish that goal.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, this amendment does accomplish that goal. It is a straightforward amendment. It is a straightforward appropriation back into the Power Development Revolving Loan Fund. And You can no longer raise a constitutional question when it is a straightforward appropriation by the legislature.
Representative Cotton.
Well, it depends on, Mr. Speaker, thank you. I suppose it depends on what you want to do. The bill originally would have put the, had those monies flow to the general fund, and that's happens to be where I think it would be most appropriate for those funds to go. The amendment would keep them in the Power Development Fund. So it's just a matter of where you think they ought to be, I guess.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
9 yeas, 28 nays.
Amendment number 2 is failed adoption. The bill is back before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number 3 and ask unanimous consent.
Okay. Amendment number 3, of course, is a title amendment and can be done so in third reading. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The purpose of this amendment is to make the title more precise so that it will not become a Christmas tree, and I ask the body's support for the amendment.
Any further debate on the amendment? Representative Pettyjohn. Representative Rieger. Representative Phillips. Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm just curious if... I think that my question was just answered, but I'm just curious if it's the intent of the sponsor that this is going to prevent changes in the other body by trying to tie down a title. Is that the entire purpose of this, or is this to just make it conform with the body of it as it is now?
Representative Brown.
Well, it's to make the title accurately reflect the content of the legislation and to prevent changes in the other body.
Representative Gull. Oh, wait, Representative Rieger, excuse me. Representative Gull, would you yield? Representative Rieger didn't have his question answered. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think my question was answered now. I agree that this amendment would make the title conform with the content of the bill as it is now, and I really don't have a lot of confidence of how much that will restrict what happens in the other body.
Are there any objections to amendment number 3? Any objections to amendment number 3? Hearing no objections, amendment number 3, the title change, has been adopted. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 120, Finance, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
32 yeas, 5 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 120, Finance, title amendment, has passed the House on reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on CS for House Bill 58, Finance Amended.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. This brings us back to the daily calendar. We have a resolution there. Would the clerk please make reference to that?
House Resolution Number 4 by Davidson, Herman, Grusendorf, Sawacki, Martin, Rieger, Frank, Gall, Hoffman, Cato, Swackhammer, Collins, Hudson, Ellis, Sund, Almer, Brown, Kopanen, Navarre, and Pierce, relating to an application by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute for certain federal funds. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, it's a House Resolution, second and final reading. Any debate? Representative Davidson.
House Resolution 4 was requested by the subcommittees of
fisheries and international trade. This resolution supports a grant submitted by ASME, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, to the Targeted Export Assistance Program. The TEA program in the U.S. Department of Agriculture was created by Congress to combat unfair trade practices erected by certain nations. The Council of the U.S. Department of Agriculture recently ruled that these programs could include seafood and seafood products. This grant assists ASME in its efforts to secure $3.5 million for commodities that are experiencing market erosion or problems with market access, such as the Canadian practices on salmon and herring and the Japanese import restraints on herring and pollock, as well as the massive subsidies extended by Norway to its fishing industry. The grant would be used to conduct market research and initiate promotional campaigns to regain fair and reliable market share for Alaskan products in Western Europe and Japan. I hope all of my colleagues will show support for this effort by ASME to increase markets for our Alaskan products. Thank you.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Resolution 4 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
37 yeas, no nays.
House Resolution 4 has passed the House. Final action on some citations on today's calendar. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have two citations on the calendar today. The first honoring the Diamond High School Boys Nordic Ski Team, 1987 state champions. The second honoring Diamond High School Boys Basketball Team, 1987 Class AAAA state champions. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House approve both citations.
Any objections as the adoption of the citations on today's calendar? Hearing no objections, the citations have been adopted. Unfinished business. Any unfinished business to come before this body? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a couple of requests for excused absence, and I move and ask unanimous consent that the House approve them. First is for Representative Sund from 7 a.m. Friday, March 20th, until playing time, Monday, March 23rd. Second, from Representative Pettyjohn, from playing time, Friday, March 13, that is today, until playing time, Tuesday, March 17.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the members that were mentioned by the Majority Leader are excused from the call of the House. Any further unfinished business? Standing or special committee announcements. Representative Sund.
Speaker, I'd like to announce that two bills that were scheduled in Judiciary today, House Bill 3, Sale and Consignment of Artworks, and House Bill 52, Motor Vehicle Forfeiture, will be held over until Tuesday afternoon at 1:30 and will be brought up for consideration at that time.
Any further committee announcements? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, just making sure that it's not listed here. The House Resources Subcommittee on House Bill 93, Rec Rivers, will have another subcommittee meeting Monday morning at 9 o'clock in the House Resources Room.
Any further committee announcements? General announcements. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First is an announcement that we will have Senate Bill 90, which has been held over until Monday for reconsideration, and I'd ask the members to keep that packet on their desk. And secondly, we've had House Bill 58, the bill on the tax information, that's held over also. Please keep your packets on your desk for that bill as well. Second, in keeping with our tradition, we have a birthday, and it's to the co-chairman of the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, Representative Ellis.
Representative Ellis, if this is your birthday, would you care to say a few words?
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's my privilege to speak with this body. That was a message from God. It's my privilege to serve in this body with my colleagues at this particular time in Alaska's history, and I'm 27 years old today and have attained the median age of all Alaskans, so I'll try and continue to bring a youthful perspective to this body. Thank you.
That's what we all said. Representative Porchot.
Mr. Speaker, if we might move up just a little bit on announcements to subcommittee announcements.
Any objections? Go ahead, Representative.
In reviewing the calendar on the announced meetings, I see that a couple of subcommittee meetings on the DOT budget, joint meetings with the Finance Committee, have been deleted. I want to remind members that on Tuesday, March 17th at 3:30 p.m., there will be a joint meeting with Special Telecommunications Committee on the data processing aspects of DOT. That's at 6:03 in the court building. And then on Thursday, March 19th, at 3:30 in room 518 of the Capitol, we will be jointly meeting on the Anchorage and Fairbanks International Airport budgets.
Okay. Any further announcements? Okay.
Speaker.
Representative Sund.
Yeah, something was just handed out on our desk, and I'd appreciate whoever did it to announce where it came from.
Mr. Speaker,
Representative Ulmer.
I plan to speak to this issue during special orders, and my apologies for not having my name on it.
Okay. I've got one here from Jack Kemp. okay. Let's go to special orders. Excuse me, Representative Rieger.
Under general announcements, I'd like to bring the bodies up to date on what the race standings are in the Iditarod race. The leaders have left the ghost town of Iditarod, and they're on their way to Shagaluk now. There are seven people who have left Iditarod: Dewey Halverson, Jerry Austin, Tim Osmar, Susan Butcher, and Rick Swenson are left at the same time, Ted English and Joe Runyon. And one team, I'd just like to add that one team that I trained with for several years who is has a musher, Diana Dronenberg, is now in 14th place.
Representative Gull. Okay. Special orders. Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like consent of the body to speak on this document that was just placed on my desk.
Any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to thank whoever handed it out, this thing that has Jack Kemp's name on the top. I take note that it states that development of ANWR will reduce our dependence on energy imports, and in the last paragraph that it will provide a secure American energy source. I assume that's a position opposing the export of Alaska oil, and glad to have this document.
Representative Phillips.
Speaker, I would like to move it under special orders, the APU wrestling citation that's on everybody's desk.
Are there any objections to special orders? Hearing no objection.
Mr. Speaker, I move for the adoption of the citation.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the citation? Hearing none, the citation has been adopted. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we move up the calendar to introduction, guests?
Any objections? Hearing none.
Representative Swackhammer and I have another guest in Gallery B, the mayor of the city of Kenai, John Williams.
Any further guests for introduction? Back to special orders. Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, I would ask permission to address the body on the subject of state spending and state revenues.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed, Representative.
Mr. Speaker, I shared with you all this morning some information which I have received from the Governor's Office and from the Department of Revenue, and I will not take the time of the body to read through it. I would just like to draw your attention to some of it, which I believe is very relevant
to the discussions that this body has been having about the budget reserve account, will be having about the earnings reserve on the permanent fund, and hopefully someday we'll have on the subject of a state income tax. The first item before you is titled Alaska State Spending, a Review of the Record. And the information which is portrayed via the graphs in this document describes how radically we have reduced state spending in the last couple of years. And I think this is an important thing for us to consider, given the fact that we receive numerous POMs on the subject of how important it is to reduce state spending. I think we all admit it is an important thing to have to try to reduce state spending, but I would just point out to your attention that the FY88 budget will reduce state spending to the FY79 spending level, actually about 10% less than the FY79 spending level. And if you take out revenue sharing and municipal assistance, which we did not have in the 70s, in the early 70s, the spending level is actually at the FY82 or FY72 spending level adjusted for inflation. So I just point out that we are making some progress in the general direction of reducing state spending. And if you take a look at the numbers and adjust them for inflation, you will see that we have significantly cut state spending already. The second item, which is titled State of Alaska Financial Plan, Unrestricted General Fund Revenues. The most important line that I would like to draw to your attention is the deficit shortfall line, which is about the fourth line down. And the reason I think that's important for us to take a look at is we have been very preoccupied with the FY87 deficit. We've been looking at how to fill the $882 million deficit with the budget reserve account, with perhaps earnings of the permanent fund, and other methods. I'd just like to ask you to take a look at FY88 and see an in excess of $600 million deficit, FY89, an in excess of $460 million deficit, and admittedly, there is uncertainty associated with exactly how large the deficit will be, but I guess the point is, let's not just focus on FY87 and FY89. I think we have a responsibility to our constituents to look beyond just the most immediate fiscal year. And that deficit that you're looking at, that roughly $400 million plus deficit in the near term, has to be filled somehow. If we're going to spend all of our savings this year, the entire budget reserve account and the permanent fund earnings, and leave ourselves with basically no savings, next year and the year after that and the year after that, we still have a gigantic deficit that we're going to have to fill. And the pages which follow that overview show you some alternatives, including the personal income tax, which can be used to stuff that deficit. And if you don't like that one, try to come up with a different one. And I guess that's the message of the Fairbanks Daily News Minor editorial, which was shared with us yesterday. You may not like the personal income tax, but frankly, there aren't a lot of alternatives for the next few years. And the final documents basically show unrestricted general fund revenues in millions of dollars in terms of how sharply we drop off, both in terms of total dollars and in terms of petroleum production projections. And I think these numbers are really useful therapy, reality therapy for all of us that would just like to pretend that the problem is this year. It's not this year, it's next year, and it's the year after that. And unless we do something serious about generating some revenues for those years, we are going to be in a much serious problem than we are today. Thank you very much for your time.
Representative Sun.
Mr. Speaker, I'd ask for the privilege of the floor to talk about the economy of the state of Alaska.
Are there any objections? Hearing none.
Mr. Speaker, I want to raise an issue that I was brought aware of again today, and that has to do with utilization of our products that are produced in the state of Alaska in Alaska. And we've passed several laws that have stated, starting back in 1949, we had a law that says the use of local forest products, says in a project financed in the state with state money in which the use of timber, lumber, manufactured lumber products is required, only timber and lumber manufactured products originating in this state from local forests shall be used wherever practical. And that was never utilized. And we always ran into problems, and last year we passed another bill Products Preference Bill, stating that we should give a product preference to people who utilize state products. We've passed several items in the past few years. And one of the problems that we came into was the specifications put out by the Department of Transportation and General Services that just don't specify items that are used in Alaska. So when it goes out to bid, you can't even bid the products. And I just have the latest one here. This is a February 6, 1987. This is from the Division of General Services and Supply, Juneau, Alaska. It's the delivery for the Department of Corrections to the Palmer Correctional Facility. They want to do some work on their roof up there, and part of the specification is 7,500 linear feet of lumber, 1x6, fir. Well, let me tell you, we don't grow fir in Alaska. We grow spruce, and we grow hemlock, and we grow birch, and a lot of other hardwoods, but we don't grow fir. They want 160 each lumber, 2x6 by 18 foot hem fir. Well, hem fir isn't even a tree. It's hemlock or fir, and we don't have that in this state either. And it would really help developing our industry. We use 100 million board feet of lumber a year in this state, and about 2% is utilized from this state. And if you'll recall the people here last year, when the fellow representative from my district and I got up and complained about the railroad is buying all the railroad ties out of state and out of Seattle, and they finally came around and bought some from the Wrangell Mill in Wrangell. But here we go again. We're just running around in circles here trying to get our economy going, trying to get people to use products we have in this state, and we can't get Mr. DeBerry over in the contracting officer over here to write a specification that would allow us to use Alaska products. And I want to continue to another point, and this has to do with some letter of intent we put in a bill last year, Atlantic Province Bill, and it's an attorney general, no, it's a deputy borough attorney opinion, Michael Gaddy, from the Mat-Su Borough regarding whether they have to use Alaska products with borough money. And his argument is that state money turns into borough money when we give them state money, and therefore all of the preference laws that we wrote regarding utilization of Alaska products with state money don't apply to boroughs. And I have a letter of intent that the Finance Committee passed last year on House CS for Senate Bill 57, and it specifically states it's the intent of the legislature. For the purposes of this bill, 57, state money shall be construed to include, not limited to, state reimbursement to municipalities, school districts, or school-related construction, foundation funding for education in municipalities or school districts, municipal assistance, revenue sharing, and capital projects financed by general funds. And I'd appreciate this attorney up there, wherever he's at, if he'd read the letter of intent and comply with it, we could get the boroughs and school districts in this state to write in their specifications the utilization of local products. And I know a governor of this state has stated that he'd like to go for 2 years just to use engineers and designers in this state to design state products and not go out of projects, not go outside the state. And this is just one of those problems we keep going. We pound our heads against the wall time and again in this body to try to get our economy going, and we've got a bunch of bureaucrats out there that don't want to do it. And I'd appreciate if they would listen up and get on with the show. We could employ an awful lot of people in this state if we just use our products, our produce, our timber, our fish, our agriculture in the state here, and we could save a lot of state money and put a lot of people to work. Thank you very much.
Representative Menard.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to address the body on Alaska Marmot Day.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
Mr. Speaker, I know I could go on for several hours on this, but I propose to be brief on it. I question putting it in on Friday the 13th, and I see with four committee referrals, maybe it wasn't a good idea. But anyway, what I submit is that the people of Alaska are different. We are unique. And on February 2nd, we do not have to submit to some groundhog from the lower 48 to tell us how long our winter is. Mr. Speaker, while it is true, and my friend from Nome informed me, that we do have a few carpet-bagging groundhogs that did jump across the border up in Northway, we don't have to recognize them. We can promote our own Alaska hire policy right down to the groundhog. We have qualified marmots in our state. We do not need to be gawking at groundhogs from the lower 48. So, Mr. Speaker, I propose that the senior hoary marmot housed at the Alaska Zoo be recognized as the official state marmot. Think of the size of his shadow, and that certainly will shorten winter. On the next time we are in the outback and we hear the whistle of the marmot, we will know that we did our part giving him his rightful place and his longevity bonus. I submit to you Alaska Marmot Day. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Menard. Your bill has created a lot of interest. The chairman of CRA wanted it, along with other committee chairmen here. So you may not know it, but I try to protect your bill. Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to associate myself with the remarks from my distinguished colleague from Ketchikan. You're probably wondering what somebody from Midtown Anchorage, well, I happen to have a sawmill within 200 yards of my home. And they have no problem selling their Alaska product to the private sector, but they practically delivered it to the city of Anchorage's doorstep, and they have not, as of now, sold a single board foot. And if anybody thinks it's a joke, I've got a stack of information where they've tested the lumber and proved that the Alaska lumber is the quality and the equal of any that's currently brought in from other areas, be it Canada or the South 48. And you know, you listen to this young man's frustration, and it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he's not a person that just goes off half-cocked. So I don't know whether my distinguished colleague from Ketchikan has that information. I would be glad to make it available to him. But I think this isn't a southeastern problem when it comes to timber, or a problem of the fishing communities when it comes to fish, or the other price. We've got over 1,800 small manufacturers in this state, and if we, the state, created the opportunity for them to market their services and products in this state, we'd have 1,800 people employed. And so I would like to associate myself with his remarks in the strongest possible manner, and it's just not something that's confined to other parts of the state. It's very much a part of the Anchorage community, too. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further special orders? Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request the special privilege of the floor to discuss ANWR and presidential politics.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
Mr. Speaker, I have distributed to the members a letter I received from Congressman Jack Kemp dealing with his support of Alaska's position on opening ANWR. Former Representative Bettesworth and I will be co-chairing Congressman Kemp's campaign in Alaska, and the fact that all of us in this room are involved politically leads me to believe that a number of us may be involved in presidential efforts in this state, and I would encourage any of you who are promoting the candidacy of any of the presidential aspirants to get them to follow Congressman Kemp's lead on supporting Alaska's position on ANWR. This letter was something I requested some time ago from the congressman, and it was wasn't easy to get because of the Beltway preoccupation with the environmental lobby's opposition to our position. However, Congressman Kemp did agree to do it because it conforms with his views about economic opportunity for Alaska and for the country. The fact is, Mr. Speaker, we may not get ANWR through this session of Congress. It may be up to the next Congress and the next president. Thank you, Kay. However, we need to make sure that the next president, which may in fact be Congressman Kemp, as far as I know, is going to be on our side, because this battle may go on for some time. So any of you who are getting involved in this presidential race on either side of the aisle, I encourage you to talk to the candidate of your choice about this issue and see if you can get their support. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will ask the privilege of the floor in a moment, but first I request that we move up to introduction of guests.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
We have a distinguished guest in Gallery A in the back row, Mr. Ralph McGrath, who is the with the Alaska Federation of Teachers, and I'd like to...
Any further guests for introduction? Okay. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the privilege of the floor to briefly speak on the same subject as my distinguished opposite number just spoke on.
Are there any objections?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's most important that whoever the nominees or potential nominees for all parties in the next presidential election, that they be sensitive to the needs of Alaska on the ANWR issue. And the reference to my distinguished colleague from Fort Yukon was particularly appropriate because I know that her constituents have very serious concerns. And I know that the governor has very serious concerns. And so do citizens from all over our state. And as well as our being supportive of the national efforts. It's most important that the people in Washington be supportive of our efforts and our concerns and listen to Alaskans. Really listen to Alaskans. Too long, people far away from our state have not heard our small voice. But on this issue, we have a real interest, and we have a number of serious interests. They're not always the same, but if we work together, if we cooperate, then we can come up with a workable solution. If we don't, and we're divided partisan, we're divided regionally and economically, we will stand still. And we can't afford to stand still. We must work together. And I'm glad to see that at least one presidential candidate has indicated a willingness to work with us. And I hope he follows through on that, and I hope the rest of them do too. Thank you.
Any further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the body stand in recess until 11 a.m. on Monday.
11 a.m. Monday.